listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMM LP, Burlington, Vermont. I'm Shayla Shapiro, and this is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. Write the Book features interviews with authors, poets, illustrators, agents, and editors. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear an interview with literary agent Emily Forland. She's an agent with the New York agency Brandt & Hoffman. Emily Forland represents voice-driven literary fiction and nonfiction, among them bestsellers and prize winners, and has a special place in her heart for original writing that jumps off the page. Equally drawn to a traditional domestic novel as she is to more idiosyncratic work, she seeks out beautifully crafted writing, characters that come fully alive on the page, and stories rooted strongly in their setting. Humor is always welcome. In addition to literary fiction, she represents memoir, narrative nonfiction, history, biography, food writing, cultural criticism, graphic novels, and young adult fiction. You'll learn more about what she represents when you listen to the interview. I spoke with Emily last week, and I began by asking her to talk about how she came to work as a literary agent.
I became an agent, I would say, by accident, and I wouldn't be surprised if that was true of a lot of agents. I was an English major. I was in high school. I was somebody who always had a special affinity for my English teachers, and I had a couple of especially nice ones, mm-hmm. Who really encouraged me to focus on writing. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of made me take my writing more seriously and made me think more about writing. And so as I say, I was an English major, and I did a creative thesis as an undergraduate, and then I did an MFA.
Mm-hmm. Where did you go to school?
As an undergraduate, I went to the University of Chicago, and then I came to New York to do an MFA at Sarah Lawrence. Hmm. And that was about time to focus on writing, and I think it was also an elaborate justification for moving to New York City. and both of those things served me well, and I met an agent socially my second week in New York, mm-hmm. and I ended up becoming her summer intern, and I was the summer intern who never left.
Okay. And was that Wendy Weil?
That was Wendy Weil, and I worked for her for 15 years.
Wow, wonderful. What a wonderful person to run into.
Yeah, it was a very lucky thing that happened, and she was a great teacher, and mm-hmm. she was a great role model.
Yeah. Do you still write?
I write emails. I write submission letters. I hope that someday I will write again. Uh-huh. But I would say I am a dormant poet.
Do you think a lot of agents are dormant writers of some sort?
I wouldn't be surprised. I think a lot of people in publishing probably start out that way. Mm-hmm. I think it serves one well as an agent because it's hard to be a writer. Mm-hmm. And so I'm full of respect for people who really devote their lives to it and set their lives up in such a way to make it happen.
Right, right. All right. Well, so I wonder, let's talk a little bit about the job of being an agent before we get into the,
sure.
the job of being a writer and trying to contact agents. What might you say are characteristics of a good literary agent? What might be the qualities mm-hmm. that will help to succeed?
Yeah. Well, agents do a lot of things. I always say we're gatekeepers and end up being sort of tastemakers and matchmakers with publishing houses and deal makers, and we're the author's advocate through the publication process. We're sounding boards for authors. We're cheerleaders for authors. I used to always say I felt like part of our job was to act like proud grandparents, and if an author got a good review, then it was our job to wave it around, but not so much as publicists, although agents these days, some do that or have publicists on board, but in the targeted sale of rights. So anyway, agents do all of these things, and I think that different agents probably love different parts of the job. Some people, I think, are in it for the love of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are just love contracts. and some love nurturing writers. And so I think there are a lot of things, there are a lot of components. So for me, I know I love the relationships with writers. I love discovering new voices and the matchmaking process. I think patience is a good patience and forbearance and empathy are all good traits, although one also has to be steely because agents absorb a lot of rejection. We mm-hmm. have to be good sort of therapists and then there is, of course, the deal making part. You have to have a decent poker face, which I'm not sure that I do, but so that's why it's good that we do so much of it on the phone and email.
Yeah. You just mentioned about absorbing rejection, and I think that writers who haven't had an agent yet often feel very much like agents either accept you or reject you, and they are, you know, they are. The key to success is to get an mm-hmm. agent. I think a lot of writers who've never had an agent don't recognize the extent to which agents also are looking for acceptance and having to deal with rejection. And I wonder if you could speak to that. How is that in the job?
That is, I would say, as much as I would like to say that's not a big part of the job, it just is. I think it's true that finding an agent is the first hurdle, but it's not then the guaranteed path to instant publication. It can then be a longer road, and sometimes it can happen. The match can be made very quickly, and sometimes it's a long and winding process. And
right.
I think it's, for me, that means when I take on a project, it has to be something that I want to live with for a long time, and an author that I want to work closely with for a long time, and, you know, a book that I feel prepared to champion in what might be challenging terrain. There is the sort of communication part of it. How much of this to share with the author? How much to just keep going? I try to be very transparent with my authors, but it's true. You just want to be constructive,
right? Do you leave it up to them about how often you will contact? Like, do you say, do you want me to contact you every time I hear from an editor, or do you want me to just contact you once a week, or how does that work?
Yeah, I really tend to take. I think different agents do this differently. I tend to take my cues from the author and mm-hmm. try to suss out early what their preferences are and continue to suss out. I think when I started, I tended to try to be fully communicative, and every time I got a response, I would pass it right along to an author. But I think that can be a real roller coaster.
It's exhausting for both of you, I would think.
Yes. So I probably do have a tendency to save news to share, to parcel out, but I also don't like to sit on news that I think, I think an author needs to know realistically how things are going.
Right, right.
And sometimes, you know, good things happen. It just takes time. But I've said this before, and it's an odd thing to say, but I sometimes have dropped off my shoes to be repaired and kind of had a moment of job envy of the shoe repairman who can tell me that my shoes are going to be ready in 2 days. And and it's very concrete, whereas I don't always have that kind of control over a submission as much as I wish I had.
Yeah.
That kind of magic.
Okay. That's funny. Can you talk about how you find most of your clients?
I get a lot of email. and so I guess mostly it's how do they find me, but probably the bulk of the authors that I take on do come through referrals.
Okay.
From other authors I represent or have known or who have who I've met at writers' conferences or editors or friends, but I look at everything. And I do go to the occasional writers' conference, and I don't actively scout through journals. I know
okay.
some people do that, and I kind of wish I did. It's just hard to find time to do that reading when you have all the stack of manuscripts to be reading.
Right.
At the same time.
So are you reading your manuscripts during the day, or is that something that's mostly stuff that you have to do off, outside your office?
Yeah,
you know?
it's homework.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I will do a little reading at my desk, but that's really pretty rare.
Mm-hmm.
I usually do it at home. Sometimes I read on the subway and that kind of thing.
Right, sure.
But I normally do it in the quiet of home. In so
okay.
much as there is quiet in a house where there is a 3.5-year-old.
Oh my gosh. Right. So what types of book do you represent, and what are your favorite things to read?
I tend to represent a lot of, for lack of a better descriptor, voice-driven literary fiction, narrative nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
I really care about good sentences, and I get excited when I find a very distinctive voice that leaps out at me on the page. And I mean, within that, there's a range, but that tends to be the thing that kind of the unifying thing in what I pick on. I notice in fiction, I am sort of equally as likely to represent a very kind of tight domestic novel as something that is a little more idiosyncratic or mm-hmm. that takes risks. I have an appreciation for both.
Okay.
I also like humor. I don't uh-huh. require that I don't think, I mean, it is not always appropriate and everything I represent is not funny, but I do find that I have a soft spot for a book that has a thread of humor.
Well, and it's fun too to find literary fiction that has humor, because a lot of humor tends to be quite, I don't know, over the top and slapstick, but when literary
right.
fiction has humor, it's such a pleasure, you know, when you find a Joshua Ferris or an Ian McEwan who can just crack the perfect line.
I agree. I agree, and I often think that things that are poignant are sometimes more poignant because there's also humor.
Okay, great. So I wonder if you can offer advice for how a writer might do research to find the best agent for him or herself, a good fit.
Well, the thing that I always say, and I think this is it's kind of an old saw, but I think there is a lot to be said for thinking about who your favorite writers are,
mm-hmm.
and especially if there is some kinship between your work and that writer's work and looking at their acknowledgments, not always, but hopefully often, agents and editors are acknowledged, and to start there, to start in the company that you would most like to be in, mm-hmm. and then to sort of work from there.
So do you think it's a good idea, once, let's say that somebody does that research that you've just mentioned, and they find, let's say, three names that look like these are probably the very, very best fits for me for agents. Do you think that it's best to try to go through those agent slush piles, or to try to get to a conference that they're going to be at, or something where you're going to have a little bit of face-to-face opportunity?
That's a good question. I suppose if one has the time and disposable income to be able to put yourself in front of that agent, that's all to the good, but not everybody can
do that.
And
right.
And also agents aren't all, I mean, I think usually when an agent attends a conference it's because they're open to submissions, but sometimes it's true that very senior agents aren't there. They're there to be helpful, but not necessarily to take on new clients.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, which is just to say that it can be a risky investment.
Yeah.
So,
on the other hand, it's probably not appropriate to contact writers that you've never met and said, can you introduce me to your agent? Like, that doesn't...
I would not do that.
Right.
I wouldn't do that.
Right.
Which is not to say that somebody might not do well exercising a little chutzpah, but it might well be that a more junior person at that same agency would be, I think it would be hungry for,
right.
for queries. And so it might be that you start and you start at one tier and then carry on.
Right, right. Okay. All right.
Although one should be careful, I should be quick to say, about querying more than one person at the same agency.
That was not a good idea. That was a question I was going to ask you. So is that always not a good idea, or different agencies have different attitudes about that?
I would not speak for all agencies, but I just know from my own experience that it's off-putting.
Well,
I tend to take a query less seriously if I know that it's being sent sort of scattershot to.
Oh, right, right, right. No, so I don't mean that you send them simultaneously to three people in the same agency, but if you send it to the person you'd most like to work with and that person rejects it, then is it acceptable to send it to somebody else in the agency who you feel also has a sort of rapport with your type of writing, or is that just like the agency is rejecting you?
I think the agency is rejecting you.
Okay.
Although I think one could follow, I'm trying to think this through, follow up.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps. I think full disclosure is good.
Yeah.
So I think if you had queried one of my colleagues, I might wish to know that.
Okay.
I think it's good to be above board.
Yeah.
We always say publishing is a really small town.
Yeah.
And so the truth will out.
Yeah. No, it's interesting, though, because I think so many people don't know what it's like to work in an agency and don't know mm-hmm. what the protocol or the etiquette is, because it's not anything that any of these writers all over the place have to deal with. I mean, writers
right.
sit alone in a room and write, you know, and so it's good to know what the etiquette is, I guess.
Sure,
so, yeah.
sure. And
yeah.
it's as you hear me sort of trying to think it through, it's not, there are not hard and fast rules.
Right, right.
I think it's just about being polite.
Mm-hmm.
So if I receive a query from someone where I know that one of my close colleagues has already read it and said no, or who has read it and even given editorial suggestions, and then I'm hearing from that person with no mention of that, it feels
yeah.
a little awkward for both
yes.
for me and for my colleague. And
right.
you know, we all sit near each other and are in conversation all day long. So.
Right, sure. So you kind of know.
Yeah.
So now, I was going to ask you about some of the mistakes that people make when they approach agents, but I want to kind of preface that by saying that I ran across a website the other day that I'm sure you know, and I can't remember the name of it actually, but it's some anonymous agent who posts some of the worst letters that he or she gets. Mm-hmm. And they are like absurd. They're unbelievably horrible. And I just wondered, like, how common is it that people are making these complete faux pas? Is that happening a lot?
It's not uncommon. I mean, we definitely, I don't know the most egregious things. Do they happen every day and constantly? No. But, I mean, it does happen all the time that I get a letter, I get an email, but with another agent's name on it, or, you know, somebody just wow. forgets to, or will send, we'll do like a sort of odd group submission to 20 agents at once and not even make an attempt to hide it. You know, strange things happen. Or they come with, you know, confetti or, I mean, or it does, yeah. My colleague once opened a query and there was a picture of her pasted on the top of the letter as she took it out of the envelope that somebody had grabbed from the agency's website. That's
a weird
thing to do.
That's very stalkerish. I know what you look like.
It got our attention, but not in the right way.
Okay. Wow. So let's talk about some mistakes that are maybe less obvious. What would you suggest people beware not to do?
I don't like a blow-by-blow synopsis in mm-hmm. a letter.
Mm-hmm.
I like a letter that, there are a lot of ways to write a good query letter. I like a letter that really gives a sense of the writer's voice without being, you know, overreaching or precious, but you have a sense of the person who's writing it. And you have a sense that writer knows what they're up to with their book project, can give a very fluid, very short, you know, several sentence long synopsis, not that gives the whole plot, but just gives a sense of the setting and the themes.
Yep.
And can step back enough from their work to talk about it in that way. And then also a paragraph about who the writer is and what their credentials are and what they bring to bear on this that somebody else wouldn't. And so I don't like a blow-by-blow synopsis in the middle or something that's written like a movie preview.
Yeah, okay.
I think there are a lot of ways of writing a good letter, and I sometimes bring examples to conferences, and I have an example of a letter that was just an incredibly heartfelt letter giving a lot of the writer's background and something that only she could have written, mm-hmm. and she had no writing credentials. What she had was this just incredible voice.
Okay.
And then I have query letters from writers who've gone on to be very successful that were very cut and dried and plainly written and brief, but with a sort of long paragraph of good magazines and journals mm-hmm. where he had been published.
Right.
And then, you know, other letters that just really give a sense of the writer's voice or humor or distinctiveness.
Yeah. Okay, great. Now, if you read a letter that you think, okay, this is looking like a book I want to read, will you ask for an exclusive read, or does that happen seldom, or how often do you do that, and under what circumstances?
I think lots of people do it. I almost never have.
Okay.
I somehow never want to impose that on somebody, maybe partially because I know that I can take time to read, but mm-hmm. I also, to me, it's on me. If something seems urgent, burningly interesting, then I should just read it overnight. I should just read it. It's hard to do overnight, but I should read it so fast,
right.
and just register my interest as quickly as I can. But I know that people do ask for exclusives all the time and are granted them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I ever have.
So it's just a matter of personal preference or choice. And
I certainly see why one would,
right.
because it can be hard to drop everything to read something only to, then be kept waiting while an author makes a difficult decision and
yes.
interviews agents. But then I also understand that why an author would want to talk to multiple agents. And so.
Yeah. Okay. How many queries do you typically receive in a week or a month or I don't know?
I don't keep a count, but I probably get easily 10 or 15 emailed queries a day.
Uh-huh.
And then a few more in the mail.
Now, you prefer an email query, is that correct? I think I saw that in
yes.
your bio online.
I didn't.
Okay.
It has flipped. It used to be that I didn't take emailed queries very seriously, and I wanted everything in its envelope with its self-addressed stamped, accompaniment. And now it's the other way around, where I tend to be slow on the mail, and I don't respond to every emailed query that I receive, but if it interests me, then I respond pretty quickly.
Okay.
Then I have to actually read it once I receive it, but my initial response is usually pretty prompt.
Okay. And I was going to ask if you have anybody who reads for you. Do you have any interns or assistants that will help you with the reading load?
We sometimes have interns, and it can be certainly helpful to just have another point of view.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If an author has published previously, particularly I'm thinking of with a small press, would that increase his or her chances of piquing your interest, having you want to maybe look at the next thing, or is that irrelevant?
It gets my attention. It's not the only thing that gets my attention. Publication in magazines and journals, maybe an MFA,
mm-hmm.
a nice referral. There are a lot, and then of course the description of the project and the quality of the letter itself. All of those things get my attention. The thing about a track record, which you've probably heard before, is mm-hmm. that there is this funny thing in publishing where when somebody is a first-time novelist or
mm-hmm.
memoirist or what have you, then they're a blank slate that publishers can fantasize about.
Uh-huh.
And when somebody has published with a small press or a bigger press before, then they have a track record. And of course, with a small press, it's contextualized that their reach might not be as far, the distribution might not be as great, the publicity,
mm-hmm.
it's all of that. But it also really depends on what the novel was and who the press was and all of
right.
these things.
Right. And I'm assuming that the idea of a self-published author would even maybe be the same thing as...
Yes. Yeah. I mean, definitely with a self-published book, it suggests something didn't go well the first time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. I wonder if you can talk about a recent manuscript that stood out to you, either something that has since gotten published that you represented or something recent. I don't know if you feel comfortable to talk about manuscripts that haven't gone very far yet. But
I will talk about that. I have a book that's that's publishing today. So I'd just like to give a shout out to Mary Helen Speck's Migratory Animals that is coming out from Harper Perennial today. And when that came in to me, what I noticed was that she had published the very kernel idea of it as a modern love piece in the Times, and that the book was set in Austin and in Africa, and that so there are these very strong settings. I'm originally from Texas, so the Austin resonated with me, and was a convincing Austin, and so that would be an example.
And so is that it's a story collection or is it a novel?
It's a novel.
It's a novel. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Can you mention a couple of other books that you've represented, or?
Well, also coming out soon, or coming out later this year is, because now I need to champion small presses from Europa, by a writer named Jennifer Tsun, who's a poet. Is a book called Mayumi in the Sea of Happiness, and that is just a beautifully written and sly book about a librarian whose passion is books until a 17-year-old boy walks into the library and she issues him his library card and an obsession commences.
Okay.
It's a novel that walks a sort of careful line. It's both sort of very passionate and very restrained.
Okay. Now, if you're taking on the novel, a novel by a poet, will you then represent her poetry, or is that not something that you tend to do?
That really depends. I certainly, it is not generally a business decision for an agent to take on a poet, or that, for that matter, for a poet to be agented, because their advances are so small, and you know, and for some of it to have to go to commission, and poets really tend to have their own networks, but if I can be helpful, then I will, if I can be helpful on their contract or anywhere in the process, then I will. So it really depends on the situation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you get involved in the editing and revision process once you've taken on a client and maybe they haven't got an editor yet and you want to help them get a book into shape, or even after they have an editor, will you ever be involved in that process?
I'm often involved, and it just really depends. Every book comes in with its own needs, and sometimes it's just really completely ready to go. More often than not, I have some question about the title, or I'm not sure if I believe the ending, or I wouldn't have minded a little bit more of this character, a little bit less of this character. That's sort of a conversation. And I always, in those situations, feel that it is very much a conversation, and that it is ultimately the author's book, and they get to decide how much of my feedback they want to act on. So generally, when I take somebody on, it's usually not, well, if you did this, then I would take it on. It's okay, we're going to work together, and then
okay.
Occasionally, I will offer feedback to somebody and say, if you know, should you decide to do these things, I would be happy to read this again, or we can have an ongoing conversation. But
right.
Anyway, so all of that is to say, yes, I do some editing, and I like that part of it.
Right, and it makes sense that you like that part of it since you have an MFA and that you have, you're a dormant writer yourself. So.
Yes.
Okay. Let's see. How can your clients, people you've already signed, how can they help you do your job better? What kinds of things do you enjoy about the clients that are most helpful to you?
That's a good question. They can write good books, right? Yeah, they can keep writing.
And lots of them.
Yes. They, I think, in terms of the, I don't know if you're asking this, but in terms of the agent-author relationship, it's like, it's, there are so many different ways, shapes that that can take, and it's like any sort of relationship where you figure out how, you know,
right.
Everybody's a little, has their own sort of quirks, and you figure out how you work well together.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's good to be fully open with your agent once you've decided to work together. If you do, for instance, if you have a submission history or anything like that, that your agent needs to know, because mm-hmm. they can run into it in another way. So just to really keep in touch with your agent, and I think that everybody has ways that they like to be approached, but good humor is always welcome, and it's if you're going to be an advocate for somebody, then it's nice to keep things sort of upbeat. And then the other thing now is, I think it's just in general in publishing, authors who are active on their own behalves are helpful to the process.
Right. Yeah, and that's true at all levels, isn't it? I mean, that's true no matter what kind of press is publishing you, unless you've got a really big budget from some really big publisher. Everybody's expected to do some marketing of their own books now. Is that?
Yes, and I think it's good to do it sort of in concert with you mm-hmm. know, with each other, and so that everybody knows what everybody else is doing, and
sure.
you know, check in about what's helpful, and you know, if you're going to plan your own reading, then you need to be in touch with your publisher in time to make sure. There's no point in doing it unless your books are there for
right.
sale. So that kind of thing, you know, there has to be a lot of communication. But yeah, I think more and more is asked of authors in that way.
Now, to that end, talking about marketing, can you talk a little bit about social networking and how important that is for writers to be doing, particularly, I guess, once they've got a book out in the world, but also mm-hmm. for yet-to-be-published writers? Do you think that it's valuable? Like, when you get a letter from someone, do you like to go look at their Twitter feed or anything like that? Or I guess that's a couple different questions.
Yeah, I don't tend to go. I bet a lot of agents do. I don't tend to think to go straight to somebody's Twitter feed.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to go straight to their work.
Okay.
But I do think I think it, there's no question that it can be helpful, especially sort of when there is a book contract in place and the book is coming out, but I think it can't start just before publication. I think one has to be there building a presence and sort of joining a community of authors who reinforce each other.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen that go very well. I had one author who did, I thought, a very clever campaign for his debut. That's a book I love. His name is Jason Porter, and the book is called Why Are You So Sad?
Mm.
And it was published about a year ago by Plume. funny and bittersweet novel, first mm-hmm. novel. And he created a campaign before the book was published where anyone, because pre-sales are so important, anybody who ordered his book in advance from an independent book, from their local independent bookstore, would send him a receipt.
Okay.
And then he would draw a picture of them. Oh, and along with a photo. And then he would draw a picture of them, which he would tweet. And then after publication, he had a reading at a gallery where all of the pictures were hung. But I thought it was a really clever way of getting his name and the book's title in front of independent booksellers who are such great advocates for
yeah.
books.
Now, okay, so he's got artistic talent. Is that is
yes.
he capable
I mean,
of drawing
sort
a picture?
Of, yeah, well, sort of a primitivist.
Okay.
But yes, definitely a drawing style. That is, so not everybody could do this, and I don't think everybody should do this. I just thought this was a very cleverly
absolutely
implemented promotion.
And it must have kept him pretty busy for a while, I would
yes,
assume.
Yes, I think that he had some catch-up drawing to do for a period.
Yeah.
He got them all done, though.
That's actually like a big step up from, I'm trying to remember who the author was who, she had a book that had something to do with chocolate and she said she would bring brownies to every reading and give brownies away.
Well, that doesn't hurt either. Chocolate is never a bad thing.
Chocolate helps. okay, so can you talk a little bit about if you have any opinions about NaNoWriMo and how does that affect your job in December?
You know, I don't have a lot of opinions about it, except
okay.
how great that there is this force to motivate people to get their
yes.
novels written.
Yes.
But I'm not sure if I have noticed an uptick in submissions, or maybe I just haven't realized that that's what's going on.
Okay. Well, that's actually good to know, because I was wondering if maybe, you know, people are writing their novels being really excited and not really taking time to revise them for several months after writing them in a month. But it doesn't sound like that's been your experience, so that's good.
Not my experience, you know.
Okay. I wonder if you can talk about some of the changes happening right now in publishing. There's just so much. But, you know, what keeps you awake nights thinking about publishing?
I think I don't. I don't think about the macro questions when
no.
I go to sleep at night. luckily, somehow I managed to just worry about like the lists of things that are right smack in front of
right.
me. And,
plus, you have a 3-year-old, so you're too busy.
Yeah. So yeah. There's no question that changes afoot, and we don't know how it will all shake out. And I'm not, I don't feel particularly prescient. I do think that there was a period where we would all sigh when we talked about ebooks, and I think that now it's just one. It's another form of book sales,
right?
And are they making a dent in print book sales? Yes, I think so. Are they on the ascendancy? Yes, I think so. Is the power more in the hands of the retailer? Yes.
Mm-hmm. I noticed you just said one retailer.
Yes, the retailer.
The retailer.
Yes. But they are book sales. So it's just on us agents to negotiate a good ebook royalty.
Right. Right. Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting to think about, you know, ebooks don't mean people aren't reading, you know, and,
right.
and that would be the true tragedy.
Right.
Says me. That's my opinion there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm married to a book cover designer. I care about print.
Yeah, me too. I just, it's funny, I've tried both of them, and I just, you know, Kindles make your life easier if you have to read a lot. But I like reading a book. I don't know. I just do, but.
Yes, my preferred form of reading is a dusty old paperback version of something.
Yeah.
I do my manuscript reading electronically.
Mm-hmm.
And I recreate in print.
Okay, that's a good way to put it. So you do your manuscript reading electronically. So do you convert everything to a PDF or to a MOBI file, or how does that work? Do you ask your authors to send you a certain kind of file? Or
I will read a docx file or a PDF, although actually Word files work better for me electronically. But, yeah, that's what I do. And then I sort of take primitive notes on electronically, and then there's this really tedious process where I have to figure out what the actual page numbers are.
Yes.
When
yes.
I give the notes, and it's funny when you read electronically, you don't always have a sense how long a book is. So I've been on the brink of submitting something where I realized it was maybe 200 pages longer than it probably ideally would have been.
Oh.
And I had some sense that there were some pacing issues, but I really didn't realize. I mean, so it was sort of like, woo, let's talk about this, which is not to say I won't submit a long manuscript. I will, but it has to make sense for the project. And
that's so interesting. So you might never see a manuscript that you're submitting to editors, you might never actually hold it physically on paper. Is that correct?
That's odd. But these days, yeah, I mean, except that chances are at some point I get frustrated with my iPad and then I do print it out because I'm, you know, because of, yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
But it's true that I might not hold the whole manuscript in my hands. It is true. That's very odd because I certainly, and I mean, I don't feel like, I mean, there are people who have been in publishing many more decades than I have, but I still, you know, I can say, oh, I remember when we used to print everything out and put the labels on the boxes and.
Right. Well, everything's changed so fast.
Yeah.
Okay, so then my last question is just, do you have any other advice for writers who might be approaching agents or looking to get published in the near future?
What is my advice for writers? In general, my advice for writers is to keep writing and to know that when they are approaching agents, that agents, this is both discouraging and encouraging advice.
Okay.
The agents are basically drowning, in paper, and so if they don't hear back, right away, it doesn't mean that they shouldn't keep trying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is my advice.
Yeah, okay. That's so here's just an anecdote, and maybe you can just comment on this anecdote. So I write, and I had submitted a novel to an agent who I did have a personal referral, and after a year, she still had not read it or gotten back to me, and I kept nudging, and she kept saying, I'm so sorry, you're really next on my list. And I finally did withdraw it because I got so frustrated, but is that unusual, a year?
I wish I could say it was wholly unusual.
Yeah.
I actually just spent the weekend with a manuscript that I'd had for a year.
Okay.
And I didn't end up taking it on, but she had another agent interested, and so I did drop everything to read it,
mm-hmm.
which I wish it didn't work that way, but it sometimes does.
Right.
And the reason, I mean, I am slated to read several all of my authors have been delivering at once. So there were certain things I was committed to read, but I did read it and take it very seriously, and it was a close call. So I'm not saying you were wrong to withdraw, because I don't know what was the thing that would make her then say, okay, I've had it a year, but this is the...
Yeah, and I didn't hold any rancor toward her. I knew she was drowning, as you say, and I think that's a really good point. And agents' first obligations are to their clients, but just coming at it from the other side, it's sort of a little baffling sometimes, like, wow, you know.
Absolutely.
I should have put confetti in my query.
No. And then, you know, just know that agents sometimes have it on the other side.
Right.
We wait on certain editors.
Exactly right, yeah. Well, that's all very good advice and very helpful. And thank you so much, Emily Forland, for speaking with me today.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Emily Forland. You can learn more about her work at her literary agency's website, BrantHochman.com, and that's spelled BrantHochman. BrantHochman.com. Write the Book and the Radiator are supported in part by Main Street Landing, creating places for people to work, play, entertain, meet, eat, and greet on Burlington's beautiful waterfront. Main Street Landing rents office and retail space, as well as daily rentals for meetings, events, and performances in their Performing Arts Center. Contact Melinda at 802-864-7999 or MainStreetLanding.com. And by Calamity and Crows Trading Post, twisting fresh tie-dyes for individuals, businesses, and organizations with standards like eyeballs, Jerry Bears, peace signs, and their signature tie-dyed mule. Custom artisan, tie-dyes that rock. Contact Calamity and Crows Trading Post on Facebook for more information. And by the Vermont Departmental Disabilities Council, a board led by individuals and family members that focuses on bringing Vermonters with developmental disabilities into the heart of our communities. For more information about the Vermont Developmental Disabilities Council and becoming a member, visit ddc.vermont.gov or call 888-317-2006. This week's Write the Book prompt is to imagine what life might be like for an agent or an editor, perhaps one with whom you've had interactions, and write a scene from that person's perspective. Write with empathy and imagine the person's job and circumstance as you create a piece. Good luck with this exercise, and please listen next week for another. If you're interested in sharing Write the Book with out-of-town friends, let them know they can stream it live at theradiator.org every Monday from 2 to 3. Archived episodes of Write the Book are available on iTunes and at writethebook.podbean.com as free podcasts. You can visit Write the Book on Twitter and Write the Book Radio Show on Facebook for updates. You can also access the podcast and my new blog, The Silent G, by going to my own website, shelaughswithoutus.com. If you have a guest to suggest or comments about the show or news about book-related events, please send an email to writethebook@gmail.com. And do please remember that The Radiator is here thanks to community support and involvement. More information about getting involved at The Radiator or supporting it in some way is available online at theradiator.org. And that's it for me. This has been Write the Book. I'm Shayla Shapiro, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMM, LP, Burlington, Vermont.